Shalom Yehudim, Shalom Bnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Ches Be'iyar, Tavshinayin Hei, Parashas Emor, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 26 April 2015. Webcasting from the Killing Ground, the land of Israel, where the sons of Ishmael never stopped trying to murder Jews at random. So it's been a busy few days on that score. Last night in Hebron, near the cave of the patriarchs, a soldier was stabbed in the neck by what the foolish Israelis continue to call a Palestinian, even though, if you think about it, there's nothing Palestinian about any of these Arabs. The night before, that was Erev Shabbos, in Male Adumim, a 16-year-old Ishmael clone, when Ali Said Abu Ranam tried to stab soldiers in the border police, who in the end shot him dead. And this seemed to ignite the following afternoon in Atul, an area of Jerusalem, a couple dozen teenage Arabs rioting. Our police responded with non-lethal crowd control weapons against the rock throwing and mobs, largely 16 and 17 year olds, which is precisely what the Torah Mishnah teaches us about the first Ishmael, who at that age was banished from the tents of his father, the kindest man in the world, which expulsion by him of his son speaks volumes about who Ishmael was. Here was Avraham, childless all his adult life. He begged Hashem for a son and finally had one, who turned out to be, as prophesied, a wild ass of a man. Avraham's wife Sarah saw Ishmael more clearly than her husband. This was his firstborn son. And when she said Ishmael and his mother must leave, Avraham resisted until Hashem told him, "Listen to your wife. In this matter, she knows better." She saw Ishmael at age 16 or 17 mocking their little son, and she could easily imagine him in the future murdering the boy so as to inherit all of Avraham's wealth. And so Avraham did listen to her. He was the kindest man in the world, but forced by the truth that the son he had prayed for all his life was a wild ass of a man, he sent him away. And so this is our lot today in Israel. On the one hand, we have to contend with these violent, homicidal Hamitic sons of Ishmael all the time, and that is our sorry fate. But, on the other hand, we can take much comfort in the knowledge that it's all there in our Torah. This behavior by these teenagers with knives in their hands, stabbing Jews, and expecting and even hoping to be shot dead, is proof of the truth of our Book of Books. And yesterday, in Eilat as well, Eilat, whose whole industry is tourism, there was a car, I think, carrying some Ishmaelites, driving down the main drag with a weapon. They fired at Israeli cars. Three children were wounded, lightly, thank God. And let's not forget the Thursday evening rocket launch out of Gaza. First in 4 months, which landed harmlessly and did no damage in material terms, but for sure damaged, to some degree, thousands of Jews in Sderot who heard that dreadful siren again, which made their hearts beat fast, their blood pressure shoot up. The siren made them afraid, as Jews in every generation have been made afraid by lunatic goyim, driven by the satanic fuel of their hatred, who want to murder us, which they do in every generation. Which brings me to a talkback from last week that I copied. I want to read it to you. Came from one of the Israeli sites, I think it was on Wednesday evening, which was Israel's Independence Day kicking in. And the woman who wrote this objected to someone on the page saying Israel is in a constant war for its survival. Quote, "The only war of survival in Israel is that of the Palestinians. The Zionists attempt to erase their lives daily. But the worldview of Israel is beginning to shift. They are the perpetrators now. They are the ones arresting and shooting children. They're the ones sicking dogs on women and children. They're the ones imprisoning and murdering Palestinians every day. They're the ones denying passage, employment, electricity, and water. They're the ones poisoning the Palestinians' food supply. The world is watching their arrogance and abuse. How many governments in the past 6 months have joined BDS against Israel? So save your outrage for those who are legitimately being persecuted," close quote. There's a person who is functionally hallucinating that Jews are doing things the Jews are not doing. She said they are the perpetrators now, implying we are the Nazis and the Palestinians are Jews, sicking dogs on them and killing them every day and poisoning their food. This is timeless, ageless anti-Jew cogitation. I just finished reading Arthur Hertzberg's book on the French Enlightenment and the birth of modern anti-Semitism, and it's breathtaking to read these attacks against the Talmud made way back when by such luminaries as Voltaire, the Jean-Paul Sartre of the day in France, when clearly Voltaire didn't have a clue to what was in the Talmud. How could he, when he knew neither Hebrew nor Jewish Aramaic? Here were France's deepest thinkers 200 years ago, besmirching Jews for living by their Talmud with its superstitions and stupidities. That was their language, when they clearly had no knowledge of what is in the Talmud, except by hearsay. Many of them agreed that Judaism teaches Jews to hate non-Jews. That's in the Talmud. This is more delusional material with no basis in reality and truth. And here we have our neighbors today furious with us for stealing Palestine from them. And not only is the truth that animates these savage boys, they are supported in their Jew-hating version of history by once again the spiritual offspring of Voltaire and a battalion of other deep French thinkers and other European intellectuals today, such as Federica Mogherini, who looks like she would have made a very strict concentration camp administrator had she been born in Germany two generations ago. She, too, looks on Jews here as thieves who stole Palestine and who continue to oppress and humiliate them daily, just like this hysterical talkbacker with delusions of Jewish perfidy sloshing around in her head. So the last bowl of warm, innocent Jewish blood spilled on the ground by truly bloodthirsty savages. Here's truly the nuclear core of the last intifada was encapsulated in that infamous photograph of that Arab murderer in that Ramallah police station, gleefully displaying his hands dripping with Jewish blood. It's this kind of evil spirit percolating in the hearts and minds of hysterical Jew haters that leads to this psychological projection that Jews, for example, on Passover must murder a non-Jew to suck out his blood like Dracula, that they then knead into the matzahs they make. That accusation is that Jews are bloodthirsty when clearly it is the Arabs here who are bloodthirsty, like that maniacal mad dog killer in that window, intoxicated with the smell and feel of warm, innocent Jewish blood, which he got by plunging his hands into the bloody pulp of a Jewish face he and his boys had pummeled beyond recognition. They are the bloodthirsty savages in this relationship, and that was on display again several times these last few days. Seems to be the fashion now to want to either drive a car into Jews, that happened on the weekend, 2-4 policemen hit, to kill them with the car, or others stab them in the neck. Sort of like, I don't know, the latest video game. And we have to put up with it until at least we come face to face with the truth that these are our neighbors with whom no peaceful cooperative arrangement is possible. The only intelligent relations between us and the Arabs has to be our own uncontested sovereign ownership of Judea and Samaria. Until we can do that, we must tread water, so to speak, and deal with these eruptions of satanic evil perpetrated by these wild asses of 16-year-olds, acting pretty much as Hashem told Moshe they would 3,000 years ago. Yes, I think Israel eventually has to confront the reality that this generation's fairy tale of Jewish evil is the Palestinian narrative. It's this generation's deicide charge. Today's fashionable atheism in some circles, there was a flutter of such books a few years back, is really hardly new. The roots of this rejection of Christianity can be seen already in the 16th, 17th, and certainly 18th centuries. And when that happened, hating Jews for killing Jesus went out the window as an excuse. If Jesus was not divine, then the Jews were not guilty of deicide, killing God in the speech of the common man. But you still could hate Jews after the loss of faith in Christianity, but then you had to come up with a pseudo-scientific, pseudo-anthropological word, anti-Semitism, which is the new legitimate explanation, or became the one for hating and rejecting Jews. The word anti-Semitism was invented in the mid-19th century and had a run of more than half a century in which anti-Semitism was not connected to mass murder. That was the end of days for this way of thinking. For most of its life, anti-Semitism was an expression of distaste for Jews, and often how to change them, how to convert them into more respectable members of society, how to make them disappear peacefully. It was not for a long time about the physical extermination of the Jews, a la the Nazis. That was just the end game. But the world saw what the theory of anti-Semitism led up to, which was Auschwitz, so anti-Semitism went out the window, went the way of medieval Christianity as a way to hate Jews. And in its place came the Palestinian narrative that spineless Jews have foolishly adopted. Israel could begin to recharge its spiritual batteries, I think, by taking on the Palestinian narrative and smashing it. After all, as God created all that is with words, starting with let there be light, so our reality is very much a product of the words we use to describe it and shape it. Israel has to put its foot down at some point and tell the world there are no Palestinians. Descendants of Muhammad himself, the two kings in Jordan, Abdullah, and then his grandson Hussein, who ruled for 40 years, a biblical generation from 1948 to 1988, and they never recognized the Arabs on the other side of the Jordan River to be another nationality called Palestinians, which was a different nation than their nation of Jordanians. If Jordan, under those descendants of the prophet, did not recognize a separate nation of Arabs west of the river, Israel should not either. Israel has to tell the world that we will no longer play along, go along with this game of there being a Palestinian nation with rights to an independent state in Samaria and Judea, which is where the word Jew comes from. We Jews are not going to hand over Judea to the phantom Palestinians. The League of Nations mandate for Palestine called for a Jewish homeland explicitly, and it is embedded in the Charter of the United Nations. It is our title deed to this real estate, and it's about time the Goyim, the nations of the world, respect that truth. Enough of this Palestinian nationalism stuff, the two-state solution, which, by the way, no sober Israeli leader of any party will ever agree to, and this includes Buji and Tzipi and even Zahava Galon. No future leader of Israel will ever take the responsibility of withdrawing from the high ground that we took away from the enemy in 1967. Friends of Israel abroad often ask why Israel has such lousy PR, and one major reason is the refusal by Israeli leaders to confront head-on and demolish the anti-Semitic lies that our mortal enemies tell about us. That back talk I read before from that woman who believes that every day we kill Palestinian children, well, that fantasy in her head is of the same order of delusional material as the bilge swilling inside the cranium of Federica Mogherini and all the intellectuals in the West who think like her. On the Times of Israel site yesterday, there was an interview and book review of a new book by Bruce Hoffman, Eminence Grise of the terrorism experts, who finally exposed himself as never before. Hoffman has been around for years and was associated with the legendary RAND Corporation, legendary think tank with connections to CIA. Hoffman did not appear often in the mainstream media. He was a kind of shadowy expert on terrorism, which made one think he had been in the trenches tracking down terrorists at one time, really in on the know. Well, as it turns out, Hoffman seems to be just another Jew boy. In his attitude towards Israel, with the qualification that I have no proof he is a Jew, but all signs point to that. In any case, operating on that assumption, it provides background to his writing of this new book called Anonymous Soldiers, The Struggle for Israel, 1917-47, which apparently climaxes with the Irgun bombing the south wing of the King David Hotel in July 1946, which wing had been requisitioned as the British Army HQ in Jerusalem. Hoffman, for psychic reasons I'm sure he does not understand, why did he choose to go back this far, this terrorism expert? The review interview makes clear that his thesis, his purpose, was to smear the Zionists as terrorists too. And what was so jaw-dropping in this review interview is that its author, with the Irish name of J.P. O'Malley, interviewed Hoffman, who told him, quote, "The hotel was occupied by British military personnel, so it was a military target. But even if the intention, and sending advance warning, which he acknowledges they did, even if the intention was not to cause casualties, that was the tragic result. And there have been many lies told to absolve the Irgun and Begin, especially of responsibility. There is documentary evidence that clearly points to this," close quote. This left yours truly speechless. He admits that the south wing of the hotel was all military personnel, and as such, in his own words, was a military target. And then this terrorism expert goes on to classify the bombing as terrorism. This makes no sense. The man is not thinking. During World War II, one presumes some of the targets of the RAF and U.S. Army Air Corps bombers over Germany were German military bases, and if their bombs fell on officers' quarters and killed a bunch of German officers, well, that's not terrorism, that's war. What the Irgun did was bomb the officers' billet of the enemy army in occupation and do it not from an airplane, but via the ground floor. They smuggled the bomb inside of milk cans. Here is Bruce Hoffman, legendary terrorism expert, who seems unable to think clearly about what terrorism is and is not. So now it appears that he's just another member in good standing of the IBJ Club, you know, the Inside the Beltway Jews. His interviewer did say that he spoke to Hoffman in his home in posh Georgetown. Yeah, of course he would write a book like this. It's kind of calling card. He announces himself this way as a Jew boy through and through, and spending all this time writing a book not on contemporary satanic Muslim horrors, but the Jewish underground in the 1940s leading up to statehood that he declares was a terrorist organization too. This is moral equivalence between the lowest of the low Arab terrorists, be they PLO or Hamas, and Jews who fought for their freedom from satanic violence at the hands of bloodthirsty Arabs.
שמו מפארים עדת חבלו ונערץ באלי קודש הילולו תרופה
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, this new book by Bruce Hoffman appears to be the work of a third-rate mind, at least wise in this interview. There's not a word about Haganah, the dominant camp in the Zionist underground, and he calls the Irgun and the Stern Group the first postmodern terrorist movements. I immediately recoil from any statement using the pretentious word postmodern. I have yet to read a good definition of it. And leastwise, via this interview, this book appears to focus much less on the other side led by Haj Amin and his murderers. He, who in World War II lived in a posh townhouse in Berlin, stolen from a Jew, he who was paid thousands of dollars every month by Hitler to broadcast the Nazi narrative to the Middle East in Arabic and to recruit Muslims in the Balkans to murder Jews. The interviewer also spoke to one Jonathan Powell, former chief of staff at 10 Downing Street, who negotiated with the IRA for Tony Blair. It seems Powell has also written a book, and it takes the high ground above about not passing judgment on terrorism. Powell said the point of his book, which is called Talking to Terrorists, is not to get bound up by moral judgments when speaking of the subject, close quote. I read that, and if I had dentures, they would have fallen out at the speed at which my jaw dropped. Quote, let's not get bound up in moral judgments when speaking of the subject of terrorism. My goodness. The point for Powell and Hoffman, evidently, is that terrorism has been used by all national liberation movements, so let's not get too exercised about it. Hoffman himself also came up with this gem, quote, no country that is created where terrorism has played some role wants to admit it for fear that the weapon being used for that weapon will be used against them. And that is really what is at the heart of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I read that and grumbled, as I often do, whenever I come upon these second and really third-rate students of our war for survival here who make a good living at being experts and have homes in Georgetown. When Hoffman obviously knows nothing if he thinks there is an Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He even has the chutzpah here to imply that Israel has to admit its guilt for having employed terrorism just like the ancient ones. He calls Fatah a, quote, stridently secular Marxist and socialist movement, close quote. Again, Lord have mercy for the shallow gullibility of this man who has swallowed, like a communion wafer, the propaganda of the murderous PLO that it is secular, Marxist, socialist. No, the PLO has been a syndicate of Arab gangsters and murderers who have stuffed their pockets with cash as they plotted murdering Jews wholesale and at random in gruesome terrorist atrocities. Bruce Hoffman, what a jerk.
Hola, Neshama. Aleluve te cachofar. Aleluve nebel vejinor. Aleluve te cachofar. Aleluve nebel vejinor. Aleluve tofumajol. Aleluve minim beugam. Aleluve tzitzei leishama. Aleluve tzitzei leitrua. Kola neshamate aleluka, aleluka. Kola neshamate aleluka, aleluka. Kola neshamate aleluka, aleluka. Kola neshamate aleluka, aleluka. Aleluve te kashofar.
And that was Psalm 150. Last item, the good news, or so it seems, is that Naftali Bennett has been persuaded by Netanyahu to bank the fires of his ambition and accept for the time being the less than distinguished position of Minister of Education instead of Minister of Defense, Security, as we call it, or Foreign Affairs. Bennett's time will come to lead this country. He's young and can wait. And the better part of patriotism, I think, at this point, is letting Bibi build his coalition by keeping Bogey and Lieberman in their positions It's good news because the sooner the obnoxious process that hardly benefits the community as a whole comes to an end, the better. Okay, that's it for this evening. Be back Tuesday, God willing. Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.